it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
First he was ours, now he's the nation's. Kobbie Mainoo, emerging England star, the young Manchester United midfielder, is the headline maker of the international break, and the pressure and focus will step up a notch as he returns to the club game with Erik ten Hag's side visiting Brentford on Saturday evening. We'll be discussing Kobbie's excellence, Alejandro Garnacho's first Argentina start, and other key international headlines while previewing that Brentford game, answering patron questions, playing guest the player, giving you an academy briefing, and looking ahead to the back end of the season overall. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for joining me, Harry Robinson. Jack Tate is with me as always, and Jack, let's begin with our midfield gem. What a buzz it is to see Kobbie flourishing on the senior international stage, but no surprise either.
Not one bit. I mean, that performance against Belgium especially was basically what we've been seeing from him for the last, what, 3 or 4 months? It's just bravery, yeah, with the ball, ability to progress the ball forward. And actually, if you look at what England have really missed over the last 5 or 6 years as this very good team has been assembled, it has been that exact profile, as the same really for United.
Yeah.
They've had, with Declan Rice's emergence, a very good holding midfielder. Jordan Henderson did an okay job before that. They've often had decent midfielders, but they've lacked this presence who on the ball can really get the team moving. And I mean, you see it in the build-up for the penalty that Ivan Toney wins in the first half is the perfect, yeah, illustration of it. Mainoo picks up the ball, he's under pressure, turns back, and where 99 players out of 100, I think, pass that ball back to one of the centre-backs. I was watching the highlights. I didn't watch the game live, and I was watching the highlights, and I almost looked away expecting him just to pop the ball off into the centre-back, and then you see him turn upfield, and all of a sudden England are away after just one pass through the lines.
Yeah,
he's a joy to watch, and it was fun to see him translate his United form into his England shirt.
It's lovely, yeah. And there was a great picture that came out of him playing in his garden with an England shirt on. And it's really weird, actually, because it's an England shirt that I own as well, that I've worn for the last few tournaments, with that has Beckham on the back. It's a red away kit. I think it's a tournament we didn't qualify for, actually. But anyway, it's weird because I've actually bought that shirt in adulthood rather than having it as a kid. But Kobbie's wearing this shirt and he's like, he must be like 3 or 4. And it kind of reinforces the fact of how young he is. He's the, 2005 born, the third youngest United player to earn an England cap, older only than Duncan Edwards and Marcus Rashford. Incredible. And the substitute performance against Brazil was encouraging. But then that Belgium game, it was almost like the sub game against Brazil was kind of like his first few appearances at the back end of last season. And then the start against Belgium was like his United Everton game.
Yeah.
It was interesting also that it kind of formed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's dream midfield of Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham, and it would have eventually been Kobbie Mainoo. But yeah, it felt like that game against Belgium potentially for him. And I don't use this kind of out of nothing, life-changing, because that game might give him a spot in the Euro squad. And yeah, as auditions for that squad go, it was a really excellent one. And you're right, he's the kind of player that both United and England have missed. And it's it struck me, he's like a magnet, isn't he? And like all the great midfielders who do that role, but it's not often that we've seen an English midfielder in that role and that mold. Not just English, you get some great midfielders who sit deep, so Scholes much later in his career, but probably most notably Pirlo and Xavi, and then you get others who sit between 3 or 4 players making space for everyone else, acting as a magnet, but then who still have that ability to receive and play in both directions. I guess the most famous of those would be Spanish midfielders Iniesta and Thiago. So I think Carl Anka drew a comparison between Kobbie Mainoo and Thiago recently. So yeah, absolutely, potentially a transformative player for England, just as he is being for United. But Jesus, is he about to experience a new kind of pressure? It's one thing,
yeah,
playing for United, where obviously the club media is very protective, the club is very protective, and they exert a much greater control over the media coverage. There isn't as great as the kind of embracing of the media in the Gareth Southgate England era has been, and it has been a lot better. England and the FA don't have anywhere kind of the control that United do over the journalists that cover them, and the press is going to be it's another step up. He's handled all the step ups so far very well, admirably. But I hope he knows what's about to hit him. I think he does.
The pressure with England is, like, in games like this, the pressure with England in a lot of ways is probably less. Like, he probably had far less people watching England play Belgium than, for instance, watched us play Liverpool a couple of weeks ago. But the difference with England when you play in a tournament is that you can lose games at club level. You can lose England games in friendlies. You know, United can go and lose 2-1 at home to Fulham and it's bad, but it's not the end of the world. And there is only so many people that are very frustrated and annoyed by that. You go away with England at a tournament and you lose in the group stage, for example, go out in the group stage.
If he does what he did away at West Ham, for example.
Yeah, exactly. It's a perfect example where...
And because he plays for United, there is that willingness to make a scapegoat, no matter how young. We've seen it time and time and again with United players.
And as a young player that's come through the academy, you get a certain amount of grace from fans of your own club.
Yeah.
You know, he can make a mistake like that at West Ham. And if we're all being completely honest, if instead of Kobbie Mainoo, if that's Casemiro that makes that mistake or Amrabat, we're probably screaming and shouting a lot more than we were when Mainoo made that mistake. That's not going to be the case with England. And like you said, there are going to be certain pockets of England fans. It's the opposite,
I'd suggest, because most of England support hate.
Yeah, exactly. United. They're going to almost revel in him making
mistakes. They're ready to pounce. It's always interesting, that relationship between academy players and United fans, because I think for the first few years of their involvement in the first team, there is that extra grace given to them when they commit mistakes or off the pitch. And then it switches. I always remember an old United fan telling me about the reception that Ryan Giggs would often get at Old Trafford. And it would be really, really bad in the kind of early to mid 2000s as he was shifting roles, to be fair. But yeah, there would be, and even in the 90s, because he was the kind of player that would take people on and lose the ball. And that those are the kind of players that draw the ire of fans. So it's not a exclusively Marcus Rashford thing, for example. And it won't be an exclusive Kobbie Mainoo thing if it does happen. But yeah, I'm buzzing for Kobbie, and it's great. Garnacho as well. His first start for Argentina. He came like Kobbie. He came on as a sub on the Saturday and then played from the start against Costa Rica. Played 71 minutes and put in a good performance. And the manager Lionel Scaloni said of Garnacho and one of his young teammates as well, these are guys who can contribute to us and we will see in the future if they'll be with us. I'm happy. It's not easy to play with this shirt on with these rivals who make it difficult for you, he said of Garnacho. So positive for him. And it's a hard team to break into, that Argentina one, especially when you haven't gone through the youth ranks with them. Garnacho went through the Spanish youth team. So it's, he's doing well. And Kobbie was actually the second academy player to make a senior international debut last week. Did he see the other, Jack?
I did. It was Liam Scanlon.
James Scanlon, yeah. 17 years old. He came on as a 74th minute substitute for Gibraltar in a 1-0 UEFA Nations League defeat to Lithuania. He said it was a proud evening but a disappointing result. His younger brother Luca played for Gibraltar's youth sides as well. They've both been involved there for a couple of years. And yeah, James Scanlon progressing well at United. He is always a good barometer of how highly young players are rated at United, is whether they do start and at what age they start in the two kind of key competitions, which are the FA Youth Cup and the UEFA Youth League. And Scanlon played in pretty much every game of those two competitions this season. He's highly rated. He joined Derby a couple of years ago along with two other players, including Malachi Sharp. And yeah, he's doing well. He's got good physique for a winger. He's pretty tall, so he's probably slightly ahead of his peers in some respects, and he's making the most of it. Any great international storylines that you saw over the...
Well, by the way, I also just want to say, I think it was quite funny in some ways to hear Scanlon say that he was disappointed with the result. I actually think a 1-0 defeat for Gibraltar is a fairly good result in the context of their history.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. You sometimes hear of players from different leagues or different clubs going into the smaller nations and nations with less history of success and really being able to up standards just by their presence. Scanlon is 17 years old, so you'd think it's unlikely, but if he continues to progress well in his career, whether that's at United or elsewhere, then maybe he'll be that player. Like Georgia, for example, qualifying for the Euros with the Napoli player whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce without having it in front of me.
That's the first name.
What was that?
Kvitcha, I think is how you say the first name.
Yeah, yeah. If I have it in front of me, I could do it, but I don't. His name was actually everywhere in front of me over the weekend because I was on holiday. I took the international break for a chance to go on holiday. Went to Napoli. So his name was plastered all over the place. It's such an amazing city in terms of everything, but the amount of kind of footballing decor is probably more there than anywhere else I've been. The only other place might be... It is the most. The other one that was coming to mind was Split in Croatia, where you've got Hajduk Split. And
yeah, I was there recently and it was everywhere.
Yeah, just the Hajduk Split badge is all over. Mostar in Bosnia went in summer while interrailing, and that's actually two clubs, and the graffiti of their ultras is everywhere. I'm trying to think of some others. But yeah, Napoli's ridiculous. Every street in certain areas of the city are covered with light blue and white, just fabric going across between the buildings. And then you get cafes which are just covered in pictures of Spalletti still, even though he's left now, and the great players. And obviously Maradona is absolutely everywhere, as is pizza, which is incredible. So I had a very nice time. But Georgia qualifying for the Euros is fantastic. Any other great stories? I was a bit out of the loop being on holiday, but it was a shame Wales didn't qualify. Ukraine managing to qualify.
I was going to say, Dan James missing the deciding penalty was a big one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm amazed that he was put up for number five, which sounds kind of like a backhanded compliment, but given the experience in that Wales team, you'd have thought it would be someone else. Ukraine qualifying amidst is pretty remarkable.
Well, I was very shocked to see... Who did Colombia play at the London Stadium? I can't remember who it was, but I think it's a good idea that a lot of the South American teams are playing internationals in Europe, sometimes at neutral venues. But who? Colombia played someone at West Ham Stadium, I'm pretty sure.
They played Spain.
Oh, was it Spain?
I didn't even see that. What an amazing fixture.
Yeah. And then Spain and Brazil drew 3-3 last night, I think in Madrid. But
yeah, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Colombia also played Romania, but it doesn't say, I can't find where that one was. I assume in Romania. Yeah. I always remember I grew up in North London near the Emirates, and when that opened, suddenly got all these fixtures of Brazil were playing there all the time. I can't remember if I went to one. I would have been very young if I did, but I remember, I don't think I did. I think I got brought a program back by someone. Might have even been Brazil-Argentina at one point.
I think one of the most random games I've ever been to was Colombia against Costa Rica at the New York Red Bull Stadium, just outside New York a few years ago, which was actually great, but just completely random.
I saw, this is slightly less random because it was in a competition, but it's random because of the team who, I saw Colombia play Qatar in Sao Paulo in Brazil. And Qatar were competing in the Copa America for, well, I was going to say no reason, but there was obviously an unspoken reason.
I thought you were going to say it was like the Confederations Cup or something before the 2014 World Cup.
No, nope. Just money infecting the Copa America, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay, guess the player clue one. And then we're going to talk a little academy update. Then we'll go into a Patreon Q&A. Guess the player clue one, me setting for Jack this week. This can be an ex-United player, ex or current United player or member of staff. And there's three clues. The quicker you get it, the more points you get. And Jack, your first clue is this. I've worked with Jose Mourinho, Eric Ten Hag, Mark Hughes and Sam Allardyce. I've worked with Jose Mourinho, Eric Ten Hag, Mark Hughes and Sam Allardyce.
The drop-off in the kinds of clubs that those were leading me down dropped off very quickly.
Well, you say that, but Mark Hughes managed Manchester City and Sam Allardyce managed England.
Well, yeah, this is true.
I feel like you're going to need to think.
I'm conscious of the fact that you've said worked with rather than played under, so I don't know what the context means for that. Like, because I can't imagine there's many, I mean, they could have played for like Chelsea. I guess they could have been like Chelsea, Bayern, Man City, Everton or something like that.
The final thing I thought on the internationals front was, do you see Endrick's comments about being so happy to play on and score at Wembley because it was the place where Bobby Charlton had played? I thought that was we kind of had all these conversations when he died in October last year, but
yeah,
it was a kind of fresh reminder of what just a completely extraordinary global impact he had. This is a 17-year-old from Brazil. So what, Endrick must be born in 2006 or 7, around the time, just a couple of, by the time he was kind of conscious of what was going on, Ryan Giggs had already overtaken Sir Bobby Charlton's appearance record for United.
Yeah.
It was only, he would have been 6 or 7 when Rooney overtook his goal scoring record for United and England. It's, it's amazing. But I guess it does make sense, because if I had made it into the England team and I got to play at the American Isle, I'd probably say something similar about Pelé, or it does rub down. On the other hand, I'm a football history nerd.
So. Well, it's interesting. Like, I think Bobby Charlton is so, he's obviously, his life and his history is so interwoven with United specifically. Like Pelé, say you take Pelé and Maradona, who I think as footballing icons, they sort of, they're associated with certain clubs, like Maradona with Napoli, like you just mentioned, but they definitely transcend that. I think in England, at least, Bobby Charlton is very much, you think of Bobby Charlton, you think of Man United almost exclusively.
That's interesting. I think most people think of the 66 World Cup, fans of every English club.
You think even people our age who aren't United, I get that with people who were a bit older. I feel like people our age who aren't United fans just immediately think of him with United.
That might be true.
Because that's just the context in which he's often seen.
Yeah.
Or obviously,
I'm sure. I know.
The point I was going to make was just, it's interesting to think about how like someone like Endrick would have, and just young people around the world really would learn about someone like Bobby Charlton, who is so specific to, even if you take Man United out of it, just so specific to English football. It's interesting to wonder how he learned about it, and would it have been around like him being sort of taught about Pelé, and then someone say, "Oh, well, there was this." You know, Bobby Charlton, this amazing player around the same sort of time, a bit before, you know, it's interesting to think about how he would have learned about the history of Bobby Charlton and what he accomplished.
That's probably true, actually. It's probably within the context of Pelé, because I don't know Endrick's background, but most incredibly skillful young Brazilian footballers like him come from pretty rough backgrounds. And so it only adds to the kind of, where's he learned about all of this from? Pelé is probably the right thing. Okay, quick academy briefing. There has been no under-18s or under-21s competitive fixtures this week, and there won't be any next, but a couple of important updates. A under-21s group, including many of the under-18s, are going overseas for friendlies, and they'll be training overseas over the Easter weekend. And the under-18 Premier League Cup final against Manchester City, the date for that has been announced. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 7:30 PM kickoff at Leeds Sports Village. It's a day before Sheffield United at home for the men's first team. It's a real shame the game can't be at Old Trafford, but there will be a push to get as large a crowd as possible, and it should be a fantastic game. It's two really, really good teams. City will no doubt bring down a load of their players who've been playing in the under-21s. I don't think United will do that. But it will be United's strongest under-18s team that have been involved at this age group, and that's a really, really talented side. So hopefully we can get a big crowd and have another magical night, even if it's at Lee, not at Old Trafford. The under-21s are at Old Trafford too, and they play Liverpool on Friday, the 12th of April, 7:30 PM kickoff. Tickets are available on United's website. It's a couple of quid, I think. Jack, I'm going to give you Guess the Player clue too, and then we're going to answer some questions from patrons, and then we'll have the preview of the Brentford match. So your second clue, this is a player who's worked with Jose Mourinho, Eric Ten Hag, Mark Hughes and Sam Allardyce. And your second clue is, I was joint top goal scorer at the 1998 African Cup of Nations.
Whoa.
Joint top goal scorer at the 1998 African Cup of Nations.
Interesting. Okay. I feel like I should be able to narrow this down. I'm just trying to think, there can't be many players, if any, that were playing that well in 1998 that were directly managed by Erik ten Hag. That would be a very long career. When did ten Hag start managing? Like 2015 maybe? And again, I'm sort of going back to the fact that you said worked with rather than played under. Wondered if maybe ten Hag was an assistant somewhere. when they were playing.
Yeah.
I think I'll be able to figure this out if I just, if I take a few minutes to try to think about who would could have been top scorer in that AFCON, I think I'll be able to get it.
Yeah. I will give you those few minutes. Quick break and then we'll be back to answer some questions from patrons. Okay, first of all, Matt Peck says, not a question, but I'm still buzzing about the Liverpool game. Yeah, how many videos of various angles of celebrations and goals have you watched since over the last week, Jack?
At least a couple per day, I think.
Yeah. I was at my parents the other day and they said they were asking about, I hadn't seen them since the game, and they were asking about how good it was. And I was explaining and they said that my brother's girlfriend says she's just caught him just kind of chuckling to himself every so often throughout the last week, a couple of times a day, and he's just watching another video of Ahmad to goal. So yeah, absolutely, Matt. Just got a big smile.
Especially anyone that I've seen that's been from a different angle to what would normally have seen like on the TV as we're watching it live. I've just been lapping it up.
Yeah. Absolutely. Don Wilson has a question. He says, given that we probably won't make Champions League based on top four, possibly top five, should we look to avoid either the Europa or the Europa Conference League so we have more time under the new ownership, technical director, CEO, etc.? I don't think anybody wants to play Thursday, Sunday, but Europa League is a pretty respectable trophy. However, not sure we need the extra travel and we could probably use the training time. My answer to this would always be I want to be in as many competitions as possible and so that we can win them, but also as a match-going fan so that I can go to them. Yes, Thursday, Sunday is a bit of a ball ache, but what's the point of football if you're not in things to win them?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, where if we were looking at this completely rationally and you said, what is the best thing for Man United's Premier League form next season? Yeah, you probably would say, yeah, let's not bother with the Europa or the Europa Conference League. But to be honest, it's a bit of fun, especially, to be honest, in some ways, I would almost rather us be in the Conference League than the Europa League.
But is that, I'm going to question that, because do you think United have what it takes to win the title next season?
No.
So given that the answer is no, and that instead United's aim will be to finish in the top four to try and stay on the coattails of whoever's competing for the title for as long as possible, but to compete for the top four, it's different, isn't it? Rationally, then your Premier League performance doesn't become the most important thing of the season. It becomes slightly more levelled out with your performance in the cup.
Yeah, but then we're getting into hypotheticals within hypotheticals here, but I think it also would then depend on just how big of an impact being in, say, the Conference League or the Europa League would have on your Premier League form, right? Like, if being in the Conference League or the Europa League is the difference between finishing third and, well, let's say between finishing fourth and sixth, so between making and missing out on the Champions League, then I think it does feel a little bit different and maybe it wouldn't be worth it. But I do agree, and we've said this before, that winning trophies is fun, and we've said it since we won the Europa League back in 2017, that there have been times when we've had this discussion about how much stock do we want to put in the Europa League when we've been in it, unfortunately, too often. It's worth remembering that United have been in, what, how many? Is it 7, 8 European finals in our entire history? Like, yeah. They don't come around very often. And I don't care what the competition is, even if it was the Conference League, it's fun and it's exciting to see your team in it be in a final. And to be honest, in some ways,
yeah.
Obviously I don't want this because of what it would mean for our league position this year. In some ways, I'd actually almost rather us be in the Conference League than the Europa League, just to play in some sort of random places and play against teams we haven't played before.
Yeah, as a fan, I'd be well up for it. As a fan who'll probably go to quite a few of the games. I'd be well up for the Conference League. Also, it's probably a slightly easier competition to bring some young talented players into it, and United have a really, really good group of talented young players in the under-18s who it's too soon for most of them to play, but kind of at the start of next season, depending on what they do on their pre-season tour, maybe a couple of them might be called up to the pre-season tour for the first team, could be involved in the Europa Conference League, whereas the Europa League might be a little bit too much for them to be starting games. They might only be coming off the bench. So yeah, I always think with these things, all the kind of things of, it'll give us more training time is a kind of nice excuse we tell ourselves after we fail to qualify for a competition, and all fans of all clubs and journalists and coaches and players do. You want to be in competitions and you want to play in them. And given the size of the top squads at the moment and the size of United's wage budget and financial resources, we should be able to compete on four fronts. Certainly at the start of the season. Obviously injuries can make it really hard, as it has done this season, but you don't go into the campaign assuming you're going to get as many injuries as this, and hopefully that will improve from next season. But yeah, also I think kind of the key reason short term is if United are going to miss out on those, we're not going to deliberately lose games. So we want to be pushing until the last, see if we can get Champions League, and then if not, try and get as much momentum going into the summer as possible.
Yeah, and I think we really just got to see where that takes us. Harry, a question for you from Matt Peck, going back to Matt. He's asked, what's the thing that surprised you the most from your time working with United? For newer listeners, maybe explain a little bit about your relationship and your sort of time working with the club. So Matt asks, what surprised you from it? And is there anything that you would have plans to do with them or would like to do going forward?
Yes, good question. I do freelance work for United, so that has ranged in a massive amount of things, from writing to presenting to podcasts and other stuff. At the moment, this season, most of my focus is on the academy, but there's the occasional first team thing, like interviews mainly. So I do a lot of stuff on the club's history in the matchday programme United Review, but then there's a few kind of big interviews that I'm occasionally chosen to do for what reason I don't know, but I always am very happy to do them, like Cobby and Rasmus Højlund when he signed, and a recent one, Bruno Fernandes as well, about his top 10 Premier League goals, was really good. And then at the moment, yeah, mostly covering the academy. In terms of things I've plans to do with them, the thing I'm working on at the moment most is a series of films about the academy. Hopefully there'll be more information I can give on that fairly soon. But those have been amazing to do and given me an amazing insight into the kind of culture and quality of coaching, psychology, sports science at the academy. But you also get to find out a little bit about how that works on the first team front and the conversations that, for example, I got to have with a couple of people from the performance team at the academy. So that's people who are focused on sports science, nutrition, recovery from injury, injury prevention, or psychology. Yeah, all of that stuff was just so, so interesting. I could have sat there for hours and hours listening to the kind of little things like the language, the things that go up on the walls, the interactions they have with players, the way they phrase certain things to parents, because a lot of the time it's parents and players, a lot of the time it's about taking very complex things, either complex things or things that might be viewed negatively, and phrasing them so that they're taken simply and positively. So that's just, yeah, those things are really interesting. So the thing that surprised me the most is, it's a hard one. I think most people at United would say there's a real mixture, or people who have come into interaction with the club, where there are so many really, really good and talented people in what they do. But I think, and we'll see how this changes, but there is also, and I think this is true of any big organisation, there's a lot of waste. And the, I don't know if it surprised me, but it always felt clear to me that the Glazer ownership, kind of full ownership, was holding certain departments back. So whether that surprised me or not, I don't know. I guess it's a surprise only in that to kind of have it confirmed. I'll try and think more in terms of what surprised me. The players, maybe interacting with the players, they are on the whole just very normal people who have stuff going on with their lives. And for example, you might have an interview with them and they want to get home quickly so they can go pick their kid up from school. And then they're generally very polite and engaged, particularly Bruno Fernandes is just an absolute gem of a person. And I always have mates asking me who support other clubs or commenting about, like, people always call him Bruno a rat or whatever. And I'm like, you don't understand. He is by far and away one of the nicest footballers anyone will ever meet. He's just so switched on. And yeah, so welcoming to everyone and engages with everything. So you can be surprised by the players and that, I suppose.
Any player that's been
footballers are normal.
Any player in particular who's been like the biggest surprise?
Oh, I'm trying to rattle through my memory now. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is a really, I'd say, quiet, but once he's relaxed, or at least semi-relaxed, I don't think he's a player who enjoys doing media. I think that much is clear. And there are some players like that, and that's fine. As kind of journalists or like the club media have to work out how to get the best out, how to make them feel comfortable. And I did an interview with him with the cameras off. So normally cameras be on, even if it's an interview for a print product like the magazine or the program, the cameras be on so it can be used at a later date. But we did one with the cameras off, and it was at the start, he was very quiet, even just quietly spoken. And then we were talking about his kind of South London upbringing, and he was actually really interesting and, just really interesting to talk to. So that was a bit of a surprise.
It's definitely someone that I think, like, we don't really know anything about, to be honest, as fans.
Yeah.
And I respect that in a way that, you know, Wan-Bissaka clearly just doesn't have much of an interest in doing it and doesn't sort of force himself to be put out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true. For example, there's a podcast coming out with Marouane Fellaini this week that the club have done. And someone said, I feel like I never heard from Fellaini when he was at the club. So it's really interesting just to hear his voice. And it's true. There are players who just don't talk for various reasons. So I'll try and have a think on more things that have surprised me. But in general, I think fans would be enthused by how many people do care who work for the club. There are some really good people there. And Ineos's job will be to work out how to kind of structure the new club while making the most of that care and talent that is there and adding where it's lacking. Yeah, I think that's what I say. Let's talk about the Brentford game. How are you feeling ahead of this one? Brentford in a somewhat of a crisis of their own.
I just, to be honest, every time I think about this game, I think back to the previous game against Brentford and then also the last game that we saw United play. And I just think there's no way that this can possibly live up to it. Brentford are a bit of an odd team to play because at times I watch them and I just think I don't see much to them, but they in previous seasons have produced really, really good results and it has dried up a little bit for them this year. You know, Ivan Toney is still a huge threat. I'm not sure if Brian Mbeumo is going to be back. I know that he played a little bit in their last game and he's had the whole international break to recover. I think
he will be.
He's been a huge miss for them for a while. Playing Brentford, especially away, it obviously just brings back memories of last season and the 4-0, which is...
Mad that that's only last season.
I know.
It was a lifetime.
I know. It's odd because it does feel like United, like we've gone through a lot since then, but... Are we playing that much better than we were then? I don't know.
Yes, I hope so. It seems to me, and I haven't watched Brentford loads this season, but that Thomas Frank wanted a bit like Ole hasn't, a bit like United have had problems with managers doing in the past. Thomas Frank wanted to kind of take Brentford to the next step and have a bit more control on games, having established them as a Premier League side and avoided relegation, but avoided it with flying colours. And that then injuries have really got in the way of that. So there are certainly similarities there. They've had like Keane Lewis Potter was signed to play left wing. He's been playing at left back. That's why they then signed Sergio Reguilón on loan after we let him go. He then got sent off against Burnley. So Lewis Potter had to go back to left back. I don't know what they'll do against us because Reguilón's suspended. Brian Mbeumo's been out for ages. Obviously, even Toney was unavailable until January. Ethan Pinnock is injured at the moment, who's important in their defence. So they've had some similar problems. They've been poor against the big teams. They've been pretty poor against the small teams. They're in a first relegation battle for ages, Dave. So yeah, it's not a great mood there. I guess it might have changed slightly as Toney comes back with a first England goal. That might give them a kind of boost and the international break might have allowed them to switch off because it's like they've had a really tough time between the two international breaks. This might have finally given them a chance to relax and get things back to normal, especially with Mbeumo coming back. So hopefully that's not the case for us. In terms of United, one of the big questions will be if there's no Casemiro, he missed the international break for Brazil with injury. How do United play? So I guess the two options I'll throw at you are McTominay, Minor and Bruno or Cobby, Mason Mount and Bruno.
I think it will be McTominay, Cobby, Minor and Bruno Fernandes. Yeah. I would quite like to see Mount in there, to be honest. I think, you know, if we're ever going to see if Mount and Bruno can play together, and especially that trio can play together, now is surely the time to find out. I just don't see it happening, to be honest. I think Ten Hag, especially away from home, will see McTominay as a bit of needed mobility, someone who can win balls in the air. I think it's going to be quite a scrappy game, to be honest. Brentford, I'd never give you that much time on the ball, but especially given the way that both teams are playing at the moment, I don't think there's going to be that much in the way of, you know, really, really controlled, good football. It's going to be a bit of a slog, and I think Ten Hag is going to see McTominay as a good player to play in a match that's probably going to go that way.
Yeah, I think we're in for a kind of I'm hoping we're in for an uncomfortable victory, but kind of entertaining for the neutral, because I think he'll use McTominay to make this as transition focused a game as possible, because that's how Brentford play. And I imagine Ten Hag's law is he's backing United's players to be better at that than Brentford. And that's a fair enough thing to do given the situation United are in at the moment. So I'm up for it. I would like to see the Mainoo, Mount, Bruno midfield beginning to be played throughout the rest of the season, partly because we need to try it for the future. The future midfield, to see if that kind of thing works. I think it's far from perfect, but it is probably the best midfield United have at the moment, particularly given Casemiro's weaker performances recently. Amrabat's clearly not the solution, and we've spoken about McTominay's strengths and weaknesses before. I think McTominay would be pretty well suited to this game, and that's probably what he'll go with, and everything else kind of picks itself at the moment, really. There's some suggestion that Martinez could be available for selection soon. Whether that means this game, we'll see. Luke Shaw, apparently, his recovery has apparently gone quite well, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, but then I'd rather us wait as long as we need to on both of them. Martinez, obviously, it's a much greater chance that he comes back in the next couple of weeks. But after what happened to Martinez before, I really, really do not want us to rush those two back.
Yeah, and I think with Martinez, given this is his third major spell out with injury in the last year, he'll need longer than, for example, Shaw coming back to get match sharpness.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine it's possible there'll be a behind closed doors friendly at some point. I know nothing about that, but that has sometimes been the case in the past. But big clubs, well, Premier League clubs often play between each other's behind closed doors to help each other get some sharpness in weeks where there are no games. Obviously, there are games, plenty of games coming up, so maybe that won't be the case. But whatever happens, they'll be working hard to get Martinez back properly match fit rather than just healthy. I agree. Sure, Martinez, such important players that, and given United's position in the league right now, and the fact the kind of key thing now is the FA Cup semi-final, and hopefully then the final, that you prioritise their long-term well-being for next season as well as this. Anything else on the Brentford game? Do you expect United to win?
Yeah, off the back of the Liverpool game, there's no way I can sit here and say we aren't going to win again.
Same, hopefully.
An uncomfortable 2-1.
Yeah.
Late goal.
Okay. But somebody.
Fairly likely, I think.
Yeah. And then Chelsea after a West London special over Easter.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, playing Chelsea is actually one of those games I really struggle to know how to feel about at the moment, because I watched them, and to give them some credit, I think over the last couple of months, I have noticed a real difference in their performance level. I think they look a much better team than they did at the start of the season. And yet,
definitely,
the results just don't follow, and they still seem completely all over the place at times.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Okay, guess the player clue 3, and then we'll wrap up. Your final clue, unless you've got a guess that you want to give.
All right, wait, let me send you a guess first.
So your first clue was that I worked with Jose Mourinho, Erik ten Hag, Mark Hughes and Sam Allardyce. I was joint top goal scorer at the 1998 African Cup of Nations. And your final clue is this. I played only 6 times at Old Trafford, but I'm now found on the touchline every game. I think that should give it to most people. And Jack, you can read out your correct clue. Your correct guess, sorry.
My guess was Benny McCarthy.
Yeah, absolutely. 6 appearances at Old Trafford. I've got them somewhere. Played for Porto, of course, in the famous 2004 match. Played for Blackburn 5 times in March 2006. He scored 2 in a 5-3 League Cup. Well, United won 5-3 in a League Cup quarterfinal in December 2008. I think that means he has 4 goals against United in total.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, Benny McCarthy, currently first team coach at United. And yeah, worked with Jose Mourinho at Porto, of course, Eric Ten Hag now, Mark Hughes at Blackburn, and Sam Allardyce at Blackburn as well, and maybe very briefly at West Ham.
I actually didn't realise that he'd worked with all those managers as a coach, to be fair.
No, he hasn't. He played for Mourinho. He's only worked...
But I meant Mark Hughes and Allardyce. I didn't realise.
No, he also played for them.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a deliberately tricky clue.
It's a good one. No, it's a good one.
But that's the nature of clue one, isn't it?
I've got a random thing, actually, just before we go, since we're doing a bit of a random episode. Have you listened to Stick to Football this week yet?
No.
All right, so Les Ferdinand was the guest this week, and they talked a lot about his time with England. And Gary Neville was asking the question about, you know, what's happened to all of the England strikers. Because back then, he went through it. When you think about how many strikers England had in the mid to late 90s, you mentioned Les Ferdinand.
That's true, actually, yeah.
Obviously, Andy Cole, Alan Shearer, Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler, Teddy Sheringham, Dion Dublin. But he went through. Some of these really shocked me, and I'm interested in to hear your sort of random guesses. So he went through England caps, roughly, of all of these players. You can either give me a guess or tell me who you think has the, like, sort of what order. So, Alan Shearer, England caps.
Oh, 73. That's my guess, yeah.
Okay, so he had 63, not far off.
Not bad.
Then Ian Wright.
Many fewer. 28.
Very close, 33.
I'm enjoying this.
Robbie Fowler.
Ooh, that's a good question. He was kind of displaced by Michael Owen pretty soon after he came through himself. So I'm going 21.
Yeah, very close again, 26. All right, well then the one you just mentioned, Michael Owen.
That's harder. But I actually, he did manage to get a lot of games in. Well, he certainly got a lot of goals in. I think quite a lot. I'm going 84.
You're very consistent. You've been about five away on all of these. So that was 89. I was really shocked by that one because when I think of Michael Owen, I just think injuries. I know he was so prolific when he was young.
I think he started coming in late 90s and he was still playing from memory in the mid 2000s and playing virtually every game, I would imagine.
Yeah, because I guess you think of like Euro 2004, it was him and Rooney, wasn't it? That was supposed to be the partnership.
Yeah, and I think the reason I know that is because I know he scored quite a lot of goals. So I knew he must, I think it's nearly around 40. He's always on the list just below Rooney, Charlton and Shearer. So I knew it must be quite a lot because he wasn't going to score a goal a game, even the talented Michael Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and then a couple more. So quickly, Andy Cole.
18.
15. Which is an absolute travesty.
I know, it's a joke.
All right, and then Les Ferdinand.
Oh, this is the hardest one. I really don't know. 41.
17.
Only 17?
Yeah.
I thought he might have got a few more in the first part of his career. Yeah. Before the kind of the others had started coming through as much.
Yeah.
Only 17.
And then Teddy Sheringham, last one.
Oh, that's got to be for a man who played into his 40s.
His England career, if it helped, was only 9 years
he
long.
He wouldn't have played.
His last England appearance was 2002.
Oh, okay. 9 years is quite a lot of time. Probably five or six games a year. 50?
51.
Oof.
It's very good. Yeah. And so what, I mean, for anyone that hasn't listened to it, what Les Ferdinand and Ian Wright was saying, they were sort of both in the same scenario where it was Alan Shearer was sort of the non-negotiable throughout the 90s, but most of the managers, especially Terry Venables, wanted sort of a traditional number nine in Shearer and then someone who could play sort of off a main striker. And that's why Sheringham was favoured the whole time. I knew that Les Ferdinand and Ian Wright would have a few less. And I knew that Andy Cole's England career was fairly short, but I didn't realise quite how few games Andy Cole played. And when you think about the goals he scored in the league, it's unbelievable. They only played, was it 15, 70 times for England?
Yeah. Well, he very consistently says he was treated unfairly. And I think most people would agree.
Yeah.
Whether that was because of disagreements about kind of different personalities, different characters, I don't know. Or something more sinister. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And Ian Wright and Les Ferdinand said exactly the same about their own careers too.
Yeah. Harry Kane on 89.
Just felt that they weren't ever given a fair run in the team.
Yeah. Kane on 89. What did David Beckham's 115, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Caps. Kane could become the most capped outfield player. He'd only have to carry on for another three. Actually, probably not. He'd have to carry on for quite 3 or 4 more years at least. But I could see him being at the World Cup.
So he needs, what, 30 more caps?
Yeah, roughly 26.
Well, it depends how we do at the tournaments, though, because you think he could get, if we get to the semi-final or the final of both the Euros and the next World Cup, he gets 15 caps just from that.
Yeah, that's true.
But obviously that could be as few as like 6 if you got knocked out in the group stage of both of those.
For us. Okay, yeah. We better wrap up. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. For more throughout the week from Jack, you can find him on Twitter at
UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at Harry Robinson 64 on the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. If you want to become a patron, support the podcast, you can do. Go to our Twitter, you find out information about how to do that from as little as a couple of quid a month. Or if you've enjoyed the show and want to help out without any kind of financial commitment, that's also fine. Share it on Twitter or to mates, or leave us a review on the podcast app of your choosing. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a great week and enjoy the Brentford game on Saturday night. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.